Mr. Johns, ready if you are. I don't want to rush you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Take it away.
May it please the court. This case is the Odyssey in reverse. Odysseus fought in the war for 10 years and then took 10 years to get home. At its current pace, this case will have taken at least 10 years to reach the real battle, which is the merits. This isn't how things are supposed to be. As the Supreme Court explained in Nick, Section 83 guarantees a federal forum for claims of unconstitutional treatment at the hand of state officials. Using abstention doctrines to close the federal courts to such claims is supposed to be an extraordinary and narrow exception to that rule. After all, while state law defines property rights, Congress has charged the federal courts to play an essential role in protecting those rights against unconstitutional deprivations by state actors like the city. For 128 years, my clients along Lake Austin didn't receive essential municipal services and weren't subject to city regulations, full city regulations, or property taxes. Then in 2019, the city, unable to annex my client's land under current Texas law, instead waved a magic wand without giving notice or an opportunity to be heard and denied my clients municipal services and the same processes given to others. They simply wrote 128 years of history and declared that my client's property had been within the city's full purpose jurisdiction at all times since 1891 and used an ordinance to retroactively change the property's status over just pretending like previous ordinances and charters didn't exist. After 6 years, four tribunals, and a litany of non-merits arguments from the city, no court has reached the merits. This court already reversed the district court on the Tax Injunction Act. We asked the court to reverse again and to instruct the district court to finally get to the merits. Here, there's no difficult, unsettled issue of state law, which is required by Pullman, nor is there an issue that's fairly subject to an interpretation that would completely avoid or significantly modify my client's constitutional
questions. Counsel, you allege that the 2019 ordinance was illegal or improper. Is that not correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you're right on that issue, how does that get us into? Does that eliminate the need for us to consider a constitutional issue?
Well, I think part of why the 2019 ordinance was illegal and unconstitutional was because it didn't give due process, didn't give notice, opportunity to be heard. We've also alleged it changed our status retroactively, which under Atfill versus Eastern Enterprises is inappropriate.
So we're talking about, at that point, we'd be talking about the issue of damages, that is what your clients have paid after the 2019 ordinance. Is that correct?
Not in this case, Your Honor. And that gets to one of the issues in the case, which is the city's argued that a new Texas law, Senate Bill 1844, they suggest that it might moot the case. And I think that hedge is important because under the collateral consequences doctrine, every single one of my hundreds of clients has a live claim. And so the decision, as the panel found in the previous appeal here, that declaratory judgment saying that we were improperly, you know, the process used was improper, that's the predicate for our being able to go to the state tax proceeding and seeking the tax refunds and the solution of the tax liability there. And, you know, I'd also just mention that there are other reasons why the case isn't moved. One is some of our clients have had their 1844 petitions denied. Others have chosen not to file petitions, presumably because they may want to stay in the city's limited purpose jurisdiction, consistent with the 1986 ordinance that we refer to in our brief. And so, you know, for multiple reasons, the claims here are not moot. But I'd like to get to Pullman as well. The first two issues, both involving Pullman's threshold elements, are reviewed de novo. And the first issue is there a difficult, unsettled issue of state law? I'd submit that there isn't. The 1986 ordinance is clear on its face that is the ordinance that said these properties are in the limited purpose jurisdiction of the city of Austin and would have needed to have gone through a process to convert them to full purpose. But if we just look at the 1986 ordinance, look at the plain language. On its face, the ordinance literally says in all caps that it is an ordinance declaring, I'm quoting, declaring the limited purpose jurisdiction status of all shoreline properties.
And if we agree with your interpretation of that ordinance, do we need to reach any of the other state law issues?
Well, I don't think this court would need to do that. I think you will have found that if there wasn't a truly genuine issue of unsettled state law, then Pullman is inappropriate.
Do any of your claims turn on something beyond the 86 ordinance if you went on how that should be read?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, I think we would be going back and hopefully deciding this case on the merits. And you know, both plain language, and we've mentioned the canons of statutory construction, which under this court's precedent, when you're trying to figure out whether there's a fairly susceptible interpretation that could avoid the constitutional questions, we have to consider things like the constitutional avoidance doctrine. We've cited the Barshop case from Texas that says, as between a constitutional reading, which is that this was a declaration of limited purpose jurisdiction status, versus an unconstitutional reading, which is saying that this was an unconstitutional tax break for my clients, you have to choose the constitutional reading every time. And then there's also this court's precedent in Louisiana Debating and Literary Association that a city can't disavow the plain meaning of its own ordinances to try to manufacture Pullman abstention. And that's what's happened here. I'm happy to address what happens if the court went against our reading of the 1986 statute. And you know, we've briefed this. If that statute went down, then we don't go to, okay, these folks are in the full purpose jurisdiction. We go to what the status would have been before the 1986 ordinance. And before the 1986 ordinance, we were under the 1953 charter, we were completely outside of the city of Austin. The city council in the 1960s looked at this issue, passed resolutions recognizing that the Tenvara line was the appropriate line. And I'm happy to explain the difference between the Tenvara line and the 504.9 line, but that's a big issue in this case, because if the Tenvara line is the line, as city council found in the 60s, that line is largely underwater, and so the new shoreline, once the new dam went in, is different and would not be inside the city of Austin at all. And so if the city then annexed us in 2019 from not being in the city at all to completely being in the city, subject to full regulation, full taxation, that's also a problem both constitutionally and under Texas state law.
The status of the state law proceedings as we sit here today?
They're abated, Your Honor, because we are not allowed to sue the city in that proceeding under the tax code. The city cannot be a party there. And so just Travis Central Appraisal District is the party. The judge in that case said, hey, the city can't be here. You need to go to another forum and get a declaration about whether the city properly exerted jurisdiction over your clients. Once that issue is decided, I think there's a very good chance that we'll get the tax refunds and clear up the tax liability. But that's not an issue for the federal courts. That's an issue for the state courts. I'd like to point out one issue that the city has brought up. I believe it's for the first time. It's on page 32 of their brief. They say, hey, we don't agree that the 1953 charter would have taken you back to being outside of the city of Austin altogether. The argument here is that there were other ordinances that were passed prior to the 1953 and even prior to the 1938 charter that refer to the 504.9 line. What the city doesn't tell you is that those six ordinances and the 1982 ordinance that they refer to don't deal with the area that we're talking about. They involve completely different areas of the city of Austin, parts of Tarrytown, Bolden Creek, East Austin. They don't touch any of our properties, and would be happy to show a map, but you know, this was not part of the record. It's, as I understand it, a new argument on appeal.
Is there any merit in considering certification of any of this?
I don't think it's necessary under MidKiff, Bartran, you know, the other courts' precedents. We don't certify when you've got an easy issue of state law. And I think this is a straightforward issue of state law that the city loses no matter which way it goes, whether the 1986 ordinance or the 1953 charter, which had repealed the previous charters. And the city, you know, whether in discovery, in their briefing below, hasn't pointed to one, and even in their briefing here, hasn't pointed to a single ordinance that made my client's property, that extended the boundary from the 10-VAR line to the 504.9 line. So I think certification would be more appropriate than affirmance, but I don't think it's necessary just because the state law issues are straightforward.
Anything you want to add on the effect, if any, of Senate Bill 1844?
You know, I think I've addressed it. That Senate, it only is prospective relief in nature. It doesn't give us the declaration we need in order to go back to the state court and say, hey, under collateral consequences doctrine, we got this ruling here. We need to come to state court and ask for our refunds and clear up our tax liability.
Is the city? This may be a question for your friend on the other side. Is the city currently providing full city services to these shoreline properties?
No, Your Honor. At least the vast majority of them, the answer is no. They don't. And those valuable city services that have been denied. And the city, over the years, looked at extending municipal services and looked at annexing these shoreline properties. But at various points, both in the 60s, in the 80s, in the 20-teens, they determined that extending services, which is what would have been required under the Texas Municipal Annexation Act and then current annexation law, they would have needed to have provided services like water and wastewater, and which are the really valuable services as far as money goes. I just point out, too, that there's a third reason to reverse the district court. And this factor of the totality of the circumstances is reviewed for abuse of discretion. But this is the kind of case that merits finding that there was an abuse of discretion. We look at costs and delays here. We've been 6 years across four tribunals. There's no real federalism interest here. This involves 1986 ordinance and 1950 charter, and we're not looking to challenge state law. We're looking to vindicate state annexation law. The civil rights claims under 1983 are the least likely candidates for abstention, and as the Supreme Court held in Nick, property rights are not second-class rights under our Constitution. There's no clearly adequate state law forum. You know, a clear remedy is required. We can't sue the city in the existing state proceeding. And if we go to a state court of general jurisdiction, the city will no doubt tell us that we came to the wrong place there. Indeed, the city's argued in this very case that quo warranto, a discretionary suit by the Texas AG or the Travis County DA, is the only available remedy in state court to challenge the city's action and vindicate our federal rights. And so there's legitimate concern that we'd get hometowned by the hometown. And such uncertain speculative relief isn't clear. So in addition to committing error on the two Pullman threshold requirements, there was also an abuse of discretion here. Courts already rejected the city's jurisdictional arguments under the Tax Injunction Act. Now the city raises Pullman abstention and suggests in its briefing that Burford abstention is the next gambit. We just ask the court to put an end to this litigation strategy, reverse the district court, and direct the district court to proceed to this case on the merits of the homeowner's claims.
Okay. Mr. Johns, thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you back on rebuttal.
Did you say to go to Las Vegas?
It happens. All good?
I have a little
bit of love, but hold on. Okay. We'll hear from the city of Austin.
Thank you, and may it please the court. The district court did not abuse its discretion in exercising its discretion to abstain under the Pullman Doctrine, because this is an exceptional case. It requires untangling a skein of nearly 100 years of local and state annexation law to reach the heart of the case, which is, where are the plaintiff's properties located? Are they located in the city's full-purpose jurisdiction, its limited-purpose jurisdiction, somewhere else entirely? As the court knows, Pullman requires both a federal constitutional challenge to state action and then an unclear issue of state law, which may render unnecessary reaching a constitutional question. So this whole series of local and state annexation laws, all of that, And its import on plaintiff's properties is an unclear state law issue. But in particular, the proper construction of this 1986 ordinance is unclear. And so we have the 1986 ordinance, and then in 2019 we repeal the 1986 ordinance. And that is why this lawsuit was filed. It's filed over the repeal of the 1986 ordinance. So if the 1986 ordinance is in any way invalid, there can be no constitutional problem with its repeal. So let's look at the 1986 ordinance, because I'd like to show the court why this 1986 ordinance is unclear. So plaintiffs rely heavily on the caption of the ordinance and say meaning of the ordinance is clear as day, because the caption says it is an ordinance declaring the limited purpose jurisdiction status of all shoreline properties lying below this 504.9 contour line. The problem is that if you look at the actual operative language of the ordinance, it doesn't say anything of the kind.
But you don't disagree that a title can be a permissible indicator of meaning if it's consistent with the text. If it doesn't override the text or contradict the text, it can be a permissible indicator of meaning, correct?
Yes, Judge, I agree that it can be an interpretive aid, but as the court pointed out, it cannot alter the meaning of the ordinance itself. Part one of the ordinance doesn't say these properties are in the limited purpose jurisdiction, or it doesn't say we're placing these properties in the limited purpose jurisdiction, doesn't say we're declaring that these properties are in the limited purpose jurisdiction. What it says is these properties shall be treated according to the tax collection policy that prevailed up until this point. And that's a tax exemption. And then part two goes on to say that property in the 492.8, between the contour lines, 492.8 mean sea level contour lines, is within the city's full purpose jurisdiction. Now, why would it say that and be solid on the jurisdictional location of that property, but be silent as to the jurisdictional location of property within that 504.9 contour line? And it's also curious that in the whereas clauses of the ordinance, now I'm looking at my, losing my papers again. The whereas clauses say that the 1928 charter put property within the 504.9 contour line within the city's full purpose jurisdiction. So what the ordinance is really saying is, well, it kind of, this property kind of looks limited purpose jurisdiction-like, because it's not really receiving that many city services, and we're all kind of confused, and it hasn't been taxed. And it also says in one of the whereas clauses that this property has a special status. So it doesn't say, the whereas clauses don't talk about its limited purpose jurisdiction status, but instead talk about its special status. And there's no tax exemption under Texas law for special status. You don't get a tax exemption for being special. Now, I think the 1986 City Council was bothered by the fact that these properties, it is true, it is hard to provide services to this area because for topographic and other reasons. And so was bothered by this area maybe not receiving adequate services and decided that this was the fix, that it would pass this ordinance and maybe there wasn't really a foundation, a statutory and constitutional basis for doing it, but nevertheless, that seemed like the fair solution at the time. And then the 2019 council thought, well, no, if property is within the city's full purpose jurisdiction, it needs to be taxed, full stop. And Your Honor had asked about the provision of services. I think I answered it a little bit. But this area, it was receiving services. Now, it's a little hard to parse because some of the properties are partially in limited purpose and then partially in the city's full purpose jurisdiction. And things like police services, police, there are mutual aid agreements. So it's kind of hard to show how they're being served by police, say, fire. But
How does SB 1844 impact all of this? It seems like the people that the plaintiffs have still already paid pursuant to the ordinance. How would SB 1844 unspool all of this conflicting information about where their property is located and what the line is? We'd still have a dispute, though, wouldn't we?
I'm sure what is a very different view of SB 1844 than my friend on the other side. To me, the SB 1844 essentially agrees with the city's position that these properties are in the full purpose jurisdiction because the idea is you are not receiving city services and so therefore you can disannex. But they would only need to receive or be entitled to receive city services if they were within the city's full purpose jurisdiction. So to me, that is a legislative recognition that they are in fact in the city's full purpose jurisdiction. And then the law also says that although in general taxpayers are entitled to a refund if they disannex under this statute, that property owners disannexing pursuant to this new SB 1844 are not entitled to a refund as they would otherwise be entitled to under this law. And that suggests to me that the Texas legislature decided that the kind of bargain it struck was, yes, this area can get out of the city limits, but no, it cannot get a refund, and that is our solution to this problem.
But either way, your opponent says that they're not getting city services anyway, that they're paying for something that they didn't get anyway. Do you disagree with that as a matter of fact?
I think that maybe they were thinking that they weren't getting enough bang for the buck, but I'm not sure there's a one-to-one correlation. Like, if police take 10 minutes to get to my house, I get to get a refund of $50 from my tax bill or whatever. And also, I think that the idea of getting adequate services in exchange for your taxes is kind of came into being in Texas law after these properties were already in the city's
foreclosure. Is it a question of adequacy of services, or is it a question of not receiving services at all, whether it's sanitation, drainage, clean water, police, fire protection? Are we talking about adequacy? That wasn't the way I appreciated the briefing, and maybe I misunderstood.
I think it is a question of adequacy, and I think the services is again a little bit hard to parse because some of, for reasons including that some of the services are rate-based as opposed to tax-based, and then also on the topic of water and wastewater. So in addition to that being a rate-based service, not a tax-based service, in general, if you have a new area, it's the developer requests a service extension, and the developer pays for the extension of services. So here again, it's like kind of a strange idea, but like, is there an entitlement to services of water and wastewater that the city pay for that extension or not? And I guess the legislature has said by virtue of 1844, yes, city, you should have extended water and wastewater to this area. But another problem is that this area, the topography, it's very hilly. It just doesn't make sense practically to extend water and wastewater to that area.
If we disagree with your reading of this case and we reverse, and your friend on the other side wins in the district court, what is your view of how the case proceeds after that?
Wins on the merits of, yes, of the claims, then I suppose then we would be arguing about whether there's a right to a refund or not, and whether the legislature foreclosed a refund through 1844, or whether they can still pursue refund through the tax case.
How do you respond to Judge Willard's earlier question about whether or not any of this, whether it would be worthwhile to certify any of this to the Texas Supreme Court?
I think that could be a way to handle it. I think it doesn't lend, I mean, one of the factors in certification is whether the question lends itself to a neat question that's packaged up for the Texas Supreme Court to decide. And I think there isn't like a clean question for them to deal with. And also, I think that they would benefit from, and any judge deciding this would benefit from, some additional development of the record, and I think more like a lower court opinion on the merits. Let's see. So I want to address how resolution of the validity, the meaning and validity of the 1986 ordinance could moot some of plaintiffs' claims. So one of the claims they make is that it's a violation that the city's 2019 repeal of the 1986 ordinance, in their mind, was an annexation ordinance. And was done without proper following annexation procedures under Texas law. But if the city is right that the 1986 ordinance is properly viewed as a pure tax exemption, then and one with kind of a uncertain, if any, legal footing, then there's no problem with repealing it And there's no reason for the court to reach whether the repeal of this invalid ordinance was itself a violation of federal due process. And similarly, the 2019 ordinance, it's a repeal of the 1986 ordinance, and it also includes some whereas clauses, one of which is that these properties have been in the city's full purpose jurisdiction since 1891. And plaintiffs assert a claim that that is a violation of anti-retroactivity under the federal constitution. That claim also goes away if the 1986 ordinance is invalid. There could be nothing, and the city's right that this property has been in the city limits since 1891 or even 1928. And I don't know if it's helpful to the court for me to discuss the 1953 charter. I don't know how interested the court is in that, but to me, it's so I think part of plaintiff's argument is that the 1986 ordinance really doesn't matter because the 1953 charter meant that the 10 Varas line is the relevant mark. And there's many problems with that argument, but one is, under plaintiff's view, the city could have annexed for full purposes this property in 1928 and again in 1938. And then when its charter says, the 1953 charter says, you annex, the city's boundaries are created by ordinance, then everything that happened in the prior charters goes out the window, which doesn't make sense as a general matter of municipal law. And it's strange to say or to suggest that something can be done by ordinance only, and if it is done by charter, then it somehow is no good, because charters have more dignity and greater weight than ordinances. And another problem with the argument is that the city has always considered the 504.9 contour line and not the 10 Varas mark as the relevant line, notwithstanding this kind of discussion in the 1960s that plaintiffs point to. And you can see that in the city did a summary judgment motion with some evidence, and there's newspaper articles referring to the 504.9 contour line. There's even a Texas Supreme Court decision that references the 504.9 contour line as the relevant line from 1971. So if plaintiffs are right that the 1953 charter made the 10 Varas line the line, why does this 1971 Texas Supreme Court opinion talk about the 504.9 contour line as the line? But all of this discussion, I think, just illustrates how localized this dispute is. This is a very much an issue of local and state concern, and annexation in general is a state matter, and the ordering of political subdivisions within the state of Texas is something that the state of Texas is interested in. But in general, federal courts are not interested in, unless it maybe, say, involves voting rights, or I can't imagine how it would involve First Amendment freedoms. But if there is, and that's kind of the totality of the circumstance, and shows that abstention is was appropriate, because again, it's not, there's no voting rights at issue in this case. The plaintiffs are not saying that they were deprived of any voting rights. And as for the long delay, I think any prior delay is now a sunk cost. So the one question for the court is whether at this stage in the game, whether it's faster to go in state court and or federal court. And I think it's going to be immaterial. The case will proceed with equal speed, whether it goes now in state court or federal court. And I also want to just note that Pullman abstention is not just about avoiding needless friction with state policies. It's also about judicial restraint and constitutional avoidance. And really, the meat of this dispute is, where are the plaintiff's properties? Are they in the city's full-purpose jurisdiction or not? And that is a state law question. I'll yield the rest of my time.
Ms. Wall, thank you so much. Mr. Johns, you're back for five.
Thank you, Your Honor. Judge Douglas, you asked about Texas Supreme Court certification. If this were truly an issue of Texas state law, if it were unclear, I think that might be a more appropriate thing to do. This deals with city ordinances, and we're dealing with the 1986 ordinance, which, I mean, it literally says declaring the limited purpose jurisdiction status of these folks, and then everything that's in the and I just reiterate that under Helena Chemical versus Wilkins, Trey Walter versus Schaefer, Burlington Northern versus Harvey, First American Title versus Adams, Hartford Insurance Company versus Crane, the Texas Supreme Court and the Texas appellate courts all say you must consider the title and the caption. And this is not, I know the city's pointed to the Code Construction Act under Texas law, but even the Code Construction Act expressly provides, in construing a statute, whether or not the statute is considered ambiguous on its face, a court may consider other matters, including the title and then caption in parentheses. So if we look at this 1986 ordinance, it talks about their special status. It doesn't say the word tax break. It doesn't say tax exemption. It's talking about their status. And and the other place you find status is where it says declaring the limited purpose jurisdiction status. And so then it talks about, in the last whereas clause, it's appropriate to clarify the status so we won't have any more fights about this stuff. And it says we're going to both delineate the rights and duties of the landowners and also of the city. That wouldn't make sense if we were talking about an illegal tax break. You know, under Barshop and also under Hunt versus City of San Antonio, the Texas Supreme Court has said when you've got two competing interpretations of an ordinance or a statute, you go with the constitutional one every time. And again, under Louisiana, the case from here from New Orleans that talks about you can't let cities just make up some ambiguity to try to get away from the plain meaning of their ordinances. We just can't do that. I'd point out that, there was some discussion about the 1953 charter. It's not that we don't think the 1953 charter is not important. It's that between the 1986 ordinance and the 1953 charter, that's the Scylla and Charybdis. This is the city cannot escape. There's no path through this. They either lose under the 1986 ordinance or they lose under the 1953 charter. The 1953 charter, which we have cited in the brief, including the passage where it says this, it says we're repealing the 1928 and 1938 charters. We're going back to the 1909 charter plus any valid annexation ordinances. I don't dispute that there have been annexation ordinances that referred to the 504.9 line in the city of Austin. That's happened. It's just never happened for any of our properties. And in the city here still can't point to a time when our status was, when the boundary was changed from the 10 bar line to the 504.9 line. Still can't point to the statute because there is none. The 10 bar line has been the city limits in that area of the lake, and it's underwater, and our clients are, if the 1986 ordinance doesn't apply or is invalid for some reason, then we go to 1953. And under that one, we were out of the city completely. I'd also point out Texas annexation law is clear. In 2019, I do think ultimately the right thing to do is going to be to apply clear Texas annexation law. In 2019, our people couldn't be annexed without their consent. And that's part of what makes this attempt of just waving a magic wand illegitimate. They wanted to get around Texas law, and so they're running here and saying there's a disputed issue of state law. It's ridiculous. If cities are allowed to do this, what's to keep the next city from saying, wow, those mansions look really fun to tax. I'm just going to declare that they've been part of my city forever. And we would have no way to get into federal court and ever dispute that. About the 2019 ordinance, it wasn't just the repeal of the 2019 ordinance that was somehow illegitimate. It's what they did after the repeal. And we've alleged this in our complaint, that not only did they not give us notice, opportunity to be heard, any of the process they gave other people, any of the services they give other people, it's that after
Mr. John, distill it to about 10 seconds. You're over time.
I apologize, Your Honor. So it wasn't just repeal. It's the full assertion of all jurisdiction over folks, all the regulatory, all the taxing power. And okay. For those reasons, we ask the court to reverse.
All right. We appreciate it. The case is submitted, and we will stand in recess till 1 p.m. tomorrow. All right.